makes sense, I suppose. It's something to think on, Caden conceded eventually, sounding more polite than convinced.
That's good. But you should think on it, Caden. It's important, regardless of what conclusion you come to.
Why?
Because it strikes me that a man needs to know what he believes before he can really know who he is.
Weir didn't hear Caden's response, but after a few more moments there was a sound of yawning, and Niamh chuckled.
I hope it's not a conversation, lad, but you look like you can barely keep your eyes open, he said. Perhaps you should get some sleep. I can take the rest of the watch.
It's not the conversation. Just a long day,
Caden assured him with another yawn.
You're right, though. I might take you up on that offer, if it's no trouble. Thank you.
There were some scuffling sounds as Caden made himself comfortable, and soon enough another note of regular breathing joined the others. Weir lay awake for a little longer, wondering at the conversation he'd overheard. Eventually, though, his eyes shut of their own accord, and he knew nothing more until dawn. Chapter 22 Asha unlocked the door to her chambers wearily. It was the end of only her fourth day at the palace, and so far the entire experience had been one long blur, with Michael proving to be a merciless teacher. She was woken each day before dawn so that he could tutor her. When he had to attend to his other duties, he made her work through entire tomes of genealogies, explaining that the blood ties between houses motivated much of their politics. He would then return in the evening, drilling her on what she'd learned and refusing to let her leave until she displayed enough progress to satisfy him. She sighed. There had been opportunity for little else. She'd barely had time to come to grips with what Alosian had told her about Weir and the attacks, let alone do anything in her new position as scribe. Still, despite her exhaustion, she was far from ungrateful. The more she saw of the shadows in the palace, treated much the same as those from the toll, if not worse, the more she came to understand just how fortunate she was.
Ashalia Chaedris.
Asha looked up at the sound of her name. The only other person in the hallway was a shadow, a man in his mid-20s, heading straight for her.
Do I know you?
She asked as he drew closer.
The Shadraheen wants to know if there is news, said the man.
Asha repressed a grimace.
It's only been a few days since I got here, she pointed out. And yet you've been made representative. It seems clear the North Warden trusts you, the man noted.
He drew a slip of paper from his pocket and offered it to her.
Instructions. A way to leave a message for us, should anything new come to light.
Asha hesitated, considering telling the man outright that the deal was off. But she knew that would only lead to recriminations, possibly violent ones, given what Aaron had shown her. And the Shadraheen couldn't know that she'd changed her mind. Wouldn't have any reason to think that the North Warden would have disclosed the attack on administration to her.
Thank you, she said, accepting the note. She turned away. As soon as you know something, make sure you tell him, said the shadow softly. He is eager to hear from you.
When Asha glanced over her shoulder, the man was already walking away. She stared after him for a few moments. Maybe it was the image of the swinging corpses in administration still fresh in her mind, but something in the man's tone made her uneasy. Asha examined the piece of paper as she walked inside. It was the name of an inn in the Middle District, the Silver Talon, along with directions and a short list of names to ask for once she was there. She paused for a moment. Then she wandered over to the fireplace, still burning thanks to the ministrations of one of the servants, and tossed the note in. The paper quickly caught, curling and disintegrating.
What was that?
Asha flinched, spinning to see an enormous muscular frame reclining in one of her armchairs.
Cole,
she said in surprise, trying to sound pleased by the unexpected intrusion.
It's nice to see you.
It wasn't, but this was the first time she'd encountered the big augur since their brief introduction, and she was still hopeful of making a good impression. Cole studied her intently for a few moments as if trying to see inside her head.
Perhaps he was, she realized with a stab of discomfort.
Burning notes is a little suspicious, he rumbled.
Asha scowled. It was instructions on how to meet with the Shadrahin's people, if you must know. I burned it because I'm never going to use it, just as the Duke asked.
Cole said nothing for a few seconds, then nodded. Have you read through the papers Elosian gave you? The vision's not in the journal?
His tone was brusque. Asha shook her head mutely, flushing, feeling like she was being chastised even though there was no way she could have found the time. She'd managed to read all the entries in the journal itself, but the Duke had given her a ream of loose papers as well. All the visions that hadn't been confirmed. The ones she would need to read in order to compare them against anything new.
Then you should get started.
Cole rose and crossed the space between them in two quick strides. His expression was so grim that Asha's first reaction was to shrink back defensively. But all the big man did was press a folded sheet of paper into her palm. Then he was out the door, shutting it firmly behind him without another word. Asha took a deep breath, partly relieved, but also a little annoyed at Cole's rudeness. She understood he had misgivings about her, but she'd done nothing to deserve such curt behavior. She walked over and sat at her desk. Once the lamp was lit and she was comfortable, she unfolded the paper Cole had given her and began to read.
I found myself in a cavern, the likes of which I've never seen. Molten red rock glowed everywhere around me. There was no way to tell, but it felt as though I was deep underground. I walked forward along a narrow path, through a tunnel and then into a large room that had strange symbols carved into the floor. In front of me stood a creature. It seemed to be made of fire, in the shape of a man but with glowing skin and hair, undoubtedly not human. Across from it, at the end of the room, past all the symbols and standing beside a short stone pillar, was a plain-looking man with red hair. There was a sword on top of the pillar, and the man was in the midst of reading something on the blade.
For those who need me most, what does that mean? He asked.
Another question I cannot answer, said the creature.
What does Lycanius mean? It sounds Dorisian. You could at least tell me that much, said the man.
Fate. The translation is more specific, but in your language it means fate, said the creature.
The man nodded, then picked up the sword. He shimmered for a moment as if I was looking at his reflection in a pool of water, and then seemed to disappear entirely. I could still see everything else, the room, the creature, but he had vanished. The next thing I knew, I was back in the palace, and I recognized the scene straight away. It was just like the other times. Fessy, Aaron, and Ashalia were kneeling next to me. We were in a lock room, and I was lying on the floor. When I looked down, I could see that I was bleeding from many wounds. The pain was sharp, but fading fast. I felt my head growing light, and then the dizziness became too much. The vision ended.
Asha sat back, stunned. It made sense now. No wonder Cole had been so brusque, and had looked so apprehensive when they'd first met. Slowly she reached over and unlocked her desk drawer, fumbling around until she felt the bundle of pages the Duke had given her 2 days ago. She drew it out, untying the string around it and flipping through the pages one by one. It wasn't long before she found another of Cole's entries, written a few weeks ago.
We were in a lock room. Fessy, Aaron, and a girl I do not recognize were all kneeling next to me, looking upset. There was an excruciating pain in my chest, and when I looked down I could see blood pouring out of several wounds. Fessy was trying desperately to help, but I could see in the eyes of the others that it was too late. Suddenly I felt dizzy. The room spun and the pain faded, replaced by a kind of dreamlike state. I tried to stay conscious as long as I could, but I also knew it would be of no use. I said something to Fessy at the end. I can't remember what. I hope it was something meaningful. I closed my eyes, and the vision ended. Asha just stared at the page for a long moment in horror. She knew this wasn't confirmation. A vision needed to be seen by a different augur for that. But it seemed likely that if Cole had seen this one twice, there was a good chance it wasn't just a dream. Feeling sick, Asha began flipping through the rest of the papers. An entry in Fessy's delicate hand caught her eye.
It was night, and I was in a strange city. Everything was made of stone and it was all black. The roads, the walls, everything. As if fire had scorched every surface. The sky was darker than it should have been, too. Perhaps it was just cloudy, but it felt as though it was always like that there. The streets were empty, but I was running as fast as I could. I wasn't slowing my passage through time, though. Maybe I couldn't, for some reason. I was trying to be as quiet as possible, but I couldn't stop my footsteps from echoing off the cobblestones, and even that small sound was as good as shouting in a place like that. Then there was a growl behind me, and I turned to see a great wolfhound, so big that his face was at the same height as mine. There was something strange about its eyes. They were too intelligent for an animal, I think. The creature came towards me, and I turned to run, but in front of me another one had appeared. They moved in slowly, taking their time, as if they knew I had nowhere to go. I screamed for help, but no one came. The first creature finally attacked, and the last thing I felt was its teeth biting into my neck.
Not long after that, there was an older entry by Aaron.
I was aware I was in a vision just in time to see Commander Hale driving a dagger into my stomach, screaming something at me. Then I was waking up, lying on the floor of a lock room in the palace. There was blood everywhere, a disturbingly big pool of it on the ground where my face was. It was hard to orient myself, but when I checked my stomach, there was no wound. Most of the blood seemed to have come from my nose, and maybe my ears, which I thought was strange. Everything ached, and I felt weak, nauseous. I tried to stand, but that turned out to be a bad idea. I collapsed back onto the floor and everything went black. When I woke up again, I was being led out into an unfamiliar courtyard. There were gallows there, which unfortunately meant that I got fixated on them and didn't take much notice of my other surroundings. The executioner watched us as we filed up beside him, and we all stood obediently in front of our assigned length of rope. I'm not sure why I wasn't struggling, but when I looked around at the people next to me, they seemed resigned to what was happening too. I didn't recognize anyone. I wasn't sure if I was happy or sad about that. We all just stood there silently as the executioner walked down the line, draping the nooses around our necks and tightening them. I watched him with a kind of detached fascination. I remember thinking I was glad he looked professional, because that wasn't the kind of thing I wanted to have botched. I stared out over the courtyard, but it was empty. Shouldn't there have been a crowd watching something like that? Witnesses? I didn't think it was strange at the time, though. Then the trap door below my feet opened and I got the sudden rush of falling for just a moment. Everything went black again, but this time I'm fairly certain it was permanent.
Asha continued through the stack of papers in fascinated, horrified silence. Most of the visions were inconsequential. What was happening the following day, snatches of arguments or personal moments, but nothing of real significance. Hidden amongst them, though, she found repeating descriptions from each of the three augurs. Three identical visions written by Fessy and two from Cole. Aaron's vision of the hanging was repeated too, though not the first part about getting stabbed by Commander Hale, whoever that was. She shivered as she stared at the pages. What must it be like to see your own death? None of the three had been able to determine any timeline for their visions, though she couldn't decide whether they would consider that a blessing or a curse. After a while, she filed Cole's newest vision with the others and locked her desk drawer. She was tired, and it was only a few hours until she had to rise again. Still, it took her a long time to get to sleep. Asha groaned as a hand shook her by the shoulder.
"Go away, Michael," she mumbled.
"It's not Michael." Asha forced her eyes open.
Aaron?
She pulled the sheets a little higher. The young man gave her a sheepish grin.
Sorry. I did try knocking.
That's okay.
Asha rubbed her face, slowly coming awake.
What time is it?
A couple of hours before dawn.
Aaron yawned.
A time no living creature should be awake, I know. But your representative is a harder taskmaster than any of us anticipated.
You don't have to tell me that.
Asha shook her head.
Why are you here?
Aaron made a face, then produced a slip of paper from his pocket that he handed to Asha.
Nothing urgent, he reassured her. This was just the only time I could get it to you. If Representative Alec keeps you this busy, you may be in for more of these late-night disturbances, I'm afraid. It's not the sort of thing we can just slip under your door.
Asha nodded.
Of course.
Aaron coughed, then gestured to the door.
I should let you get back to sleep, he said apologetically.
He turned.
Aaron?
The young man stopped.
Yes? I read the other visions last night. The ones not in the journal.
Aaron turned, examining her face for a few moments in silence.
You have questions?
He said eventually. Asha shook her head, remembering what Aaron had seen.
How do you deal with it?
Aaron bit his lip.
How long until you need to meet the representative?
Asha shrugged.
An hour? Enough time, then. Get dressed. I want to show you something.
Okay.
When Aaron didn't move, Asha pointedly looked at him, then the door.
Sorry.
Aaron flushed, then exited. Asha dressed hurriedly and soon joined Aaron outside her room.
So where are we going?
Aaron shook his head, indicating he didn't want to say outside of a lock room.
You'll see.
They walked for a few minutes, turning down a series of increasingly bare hallways. This section of the palace was older and evidently less used. Before long, even the carpet underfoot had given way to hard gray stone. The occasional windows had vanished, and dust was evident everywhere. Only Aaron's torch provided any light.
The palace backs onto a Lin Tora, he explained as they walked. These passages are cut directly into the mountain, like Tol Athian, but made by regular men, not the builders.
Asha nodded. The passageways were well made, but the differences were obvious. Suddenly, she was reminded of the similar journey she'd made with Jin, and she swallowed.
What's back here?
The old dungeons. Storage rooms.
He shrugged.
Nobody uses this section of the palace anymore. Some of the deeper passages collapsed years ago, and given that the space wasn't needed, the cost of upkeep outweighed the benefits of having it available.
Asha looked around, a sudden chill making her shiver. The walls here were closer, rough, looming in the shadows cast by the flickering orange torch.
Then why are we here?
Aaron stopped in front of a large, thick-looking oak door with a keyhole symbol above the doorknob, then produced a key from his pocket. Despite the obvious age of the door, the key turned with a well-oiled click, and the door swung open without a sound.
For this, said Aaron.
Asha stared around in wonder as she entered the vast chamber, more a warehouse than a room. The torchlight didn't reach the roof, and there was no telling how far back the walls went. Row upon row of shelves stretched out into the darkness, each holding a variety of objects.
What is this place?
Aaron shut the door.
Administration's stockpile of dangerous gifted artifacts. Every single thing they've confiscated from the schools and the tolls since the beginning of the war.
Asha stared at him blankly for a few seconds.
These are all vessels?
She asked in disbelief, gesturing to the vast assortment of objects on the shelves.
Mostly. There are some books thought too valuable to burn. Plenty of things confiscated for spite rather than because they posed a threat. But if you pick something up, chances are it's a vessel.
Asha shook her head, dazed.
Given the price administration put on vessels, the contents of this room represented hundreds of thousands of gold pieces, maybe more.
How do you...
One of the many benefits to having the head of the administrators on our side. Aside from Elosian, there's only one other man who has access. Giannis, administration's chief advisor in the palace. He rarely comes down here, though, so we should be safe.
Asha took a closer look at one of the shelves. The items on it looked innocuous enough.
What do they do?
All sorts of things. Administration took anything they thought could be used as weapons, but nearly half were confiscated because the tolls couldn't give a satisfactory answer as to what they were for. Some fire bursts of energy, plain and simple. Some can blow a hole through 10 feet of stone or put people to sleep or create illusions.
Aaron smiled.
Some allow you to turn invisible.
Asha paused.
That's why I didn't see you come into my room back at the toll.
She'd wondered about that a few times since she'd arrived, but other questions had always taken precedence.
We didn't want anyone to know we were there until we could talk to you.
Aaron moved over to a nearby shelf and picked up a torque. It was similar to the twisting, sinuous shape of a shackle, but this one gleamed silver, not black.
This is what we used. We call it a veil.
Asha frowned.
How did Elosian use it, though? He doesn't have a reserve.
Neither do I.
Aaron gave her a crooked smile.
As long as these are filled with essence beforehand, they'll work. Without a reserve to tap into, they last about an hour before the essence decays.
Asha frowned.
What do you mean you don't have a reserve?
None of us augurs do.
Aaron shrugged.
We could use essence, but we get it from external sources. We're not like the gifted in that respect.
Oh.
Suddenly, Davian's struggles with essence made a lot more sense. The thought, as with all involving Davian, came with a sharp pang of loss.
So, do you have the mark, then?
I don't. We only get one if we use quite a large amount of essence at once. Fessy doesn't have one either. But Cole got his before we realized what would happen. He has to keep his arm covered all the time now.
I see.
Asha stared at the torque in Aaron's hand. She hadn't missed being gifted more than at that moment. Aaron bared his forearm, then touched the open end of the torque to it. Immediately the metal twisted, became fluid, melding itself to his skin until his arm was rippling silver in the torchlight. Then he vanished. Asha blinked.
Aaron?
Still here,
came Aaron's voice. Suddenly he was visible again, the silver torque back in his hand. He held it out to her with a grin.
Want to try it?
Asha hesitated. A part of her did want to, badly. But she knew deep down it would just be a disappointment. A hollow echo of what it was like to use essence. She shook her head.
Why did you bring me down here?
She asked, looking away. Aaron's smile faded as he saw the expression on her face. Nodding to himself, he moved over a few shelves and located a bound book. He handed it to her silently.
What's this?
The journal from before the war.
Asha stared down at the tome in her hands.
The Augur's journal?
Yes.
Aaron gently opened the book for her, then flipped through some pages.
Here, read some of these.
Asha did so, her frown deepening as she scanned through the pages of visions. One entry spoke of an earthquake in the south destroying the city of Prythe. Another described a massive fire in Ilinalan, with the palace burning to the ground, along with many of the other buildings in the upper district. A different vision foretold an assassin taking Emperor Ufrai's life, plunging the Eastern Empire into civil war. Each one was long, detailed, and confirmed by other augurs.
None of these happened, she said eventually.
Aaron nodded.
You want to know how I deal with what I see?
He gestured to the journal.
I hope I'm like them. I hope I'm wrong.
Asha stared at him, then back at the book in her hands.
So the invasion you foresaw...
No, don't get the wrong idea, said Aaron hurriedly. Nothing Fessy Cole or I have seen has ever
failed to come to pass. He sighed. Honestly, I don't think it's likely that I'm wrong, Ishalia. We have to assume that everything we see will happen. But it still gives me hope. And that's something.
Asha flipped further through the book, a little stunned. Her brow furrowed as she came to the end.
There are pages missing, she said, pointing to some ragged edges near the spine.
Quite a few, agreed Aaron. We think whoever recovered the journal after the Night of Ravens must have taken them before handing it over to administration. With the augurs and their scribe dead, there was no way to know what was in them.
Asha nodded. She kept looking through the book for a while, then handed it back.
Thank you, she said sincerely.
Aaron had been right. Knowing just how wrong the augurs had been once before, it helped somehow, made their visions just a sliver less terrible. Aaron inclined his head.
It's only right that you have all the facts anyway. You're as much a part of this as us now. You need to know it's possible.
He put the journal back in its position on the shelf, then gestured to the door.
We should head back before Representative Alec comes looking for you.
Asha gave an absent nod, but her mind was on something else. She stared around at the rows upon rows of vessels stretching away from them.
The invasion. Wouldn't some of these be able to help against whatever is coming?
Aaron shook his head.
The First Tenet would still prevent the gifted from using them, even from charging them in most cases. It's still intent to use essence against non-gifted.
He sighed.
We thought about it long and hard, believe me. But many need a reserve to even work, and most of those that don't still need the mental training to control them. The Veils are an exception, and there's only three of them. Nearly everything else was designed to be used by the gifted.
Asha nodded, disappointed.
Of course.
She hesitated.
One last question before we leave. Who's Commander Hale?
Aaron grimaced, taking a few seconds before replying.
You wouldn't have seen him, I think. He's only around the palace now and then. He's in the army, as you've probably already deduced.
He gave an uncomfortable shrug.
I've read him a couple of times, just to be sure. He doesn't even know who I am, and he's not an especially violent man, so I have no idea why he would stab me.
He stared at the ground, and Asha could tell he didn't want to talk about it any further.
Sorry, said Asha. I shouldn't pry.
Aaron shook his head.
No, it's okay. I've just never talked about it with anyone before.
Not even Cole and Fessy?
Especially not them.
Aaron raised an eyebrow.
We can't discuss our visions, remember? Otherwise this whole system is pointless.
Oh, of course. That must be hard.
Asha was silent for a moment.
What about Elosion?
Elosion?
Aaron seemed not to understand what she was asking for a second. Then he gave a short laugh.
To talk about this sort of thing? No, we never did. It's just not the same.
He shuffled his feet, looking impatient.
We really should hurry. The last thing we need is the representative asking questions about where you were at this time of the morning.
Asha nodded her agreement. They exited the room, Aaron locking the door behind them, and began walking back into the main structure of the palace. Asha was relieved to see that Michael wasn't already waiting when they reached her rooms. She said a quick goodbye to Aaron, then slipped inside, wondering if there was time for a quick nap before Michael arrived. She'd barely climbed back into bed when there was a knock on the door. Muttering to herself, Asha opened the door to find Michael waiting. He looked at her with a pleased expression.
You're already up, he said with an approving smile. Good to see you're getting into a routine.
Asha opened her mouth to correct him, then just gave a resigned nod, falling into step alongside the elder.
So what are we studying this morning?
Something a little more practical, actually.
Michael glanced behind them to make sure no one was listening, then lowered his voice.
There was an interesting piece of news last night.
It's worrying, but it's also something that could significantly change our position here. Once it becomes public knowledge, we may get more visitors than I can handle. I need to prepare you to meet with some of the minor houses by yourself. Asha frowned, taken aback.
What was the news?
An unknown army has been sighted within Andara's borders to the north, Michael grimaced. Invasion, from the sounds of it.
Asha went cold. Michael was still talking, but she didn't hear whatever he was saying. The augurs had been right. The attack on Ilin Ilan was coming. Chapter 23
Weir couldn't help but smile as Dizia laughed, admiring the way her deep blue eyes shone when she was enjoying herself. They were sitting a little way away from the others, within sight of the camp, but not so close that anyone could overhear their conversation. Evening was falling, and Teyres had just told them that by his estimate they were less than a day from reaching Dylanus. As a result, the group was in good spirits. Since the Shateth had spoken to them 10 days ago, the only trouble they'd encountered had been occasional Desrealite patrols along the road, all of which they had avoided easily enough. Teyres and Nyam were wary of how straightforward their passage had been. Both insisted that the Shateth would not have given up its pursuit. But their fears had done little to dampen the mood. Weir's own mood was as close to positive as it had been since they had left Thrindar. He still grieved for his friends. He knew he probably would for a long time. But the pain was fading, settling, becoming bearable. For the first time, he felt as though he was moving forward again. He glanced across at Davian, smile fading as he wondered whether his friend felt the same way. He hoped so. They'd spoken little of the school in recent times. The days on the road had been long, and there had been few opportunities for truly private conversation.
"You're worried about him?"
Dizia had followed his gaze. Weir gave an absent nod. The others knew about what had happened at the school. After a few days of traveling, it had seemed better to just get it all out in the open. Still, despite everyone's heartfelt sympathies, Dizia was the only one who had managed to make Weir feel comfortable discussing it.
"I've tried talking to him a couple of times, but I don't know what to say. He's lost so much."
"As much as you,"
Dizia pointed out quietly.
"No," Weir shook his head. "It's been hard for me, too, but he's been at that school all his life. He was a servant there before he ever got the mark. Those people were my friends, but they were his family."
And there had been Asha, too. The pain Weir felt for her loss, he knew Davian felt tenfold. But that wasn't his grief to share. Dizia looked at him for a long moment.
"You think he blames you?"
"How could he not?" Weir asked softly. "He says he doesn't, but it's my fault."
"It's the fault of whoever did it," Dizia said in gentle rebuke. "Davian's still grieving, Weir. You both are. Even I can see that. If he's not talking much, that's probably his way of dealing with what he's going through. Some people just need space. I wouldn't assume it's because he's angry with you."
Weir sighed.
"I hope you're right."
There was silence for a while, though it was a companionable one. Eventually, Dizia lay back, gazing up at the stars.
"Was it difficult when you first went to the school?"
Weir frowned. "Difficult?"
"Leaving Ilin Ilan, pretending to be someone you're not."
She raised her head to look at him.
"I mean, I've spent a lot of time around Caroline, so I can imagine how people would have treated you in the palace. To go from that to nothing."
She shrugged.
"It seems like it would have been a difficult transition."
Weir shook his head, feeling a pang of sorrow, as he did every time he thought of the school.
"Maybe a little, at first. But there were things at Caladel that I never could have had as a prince. Things I hadn't even imagined growing up in Ilin Ilan."
"Like what?"
"Anonymity. Free time. Real friendship."
Dizia nodded slowly.
I suppose I can see how you would make that trade, she conceded.
She cocked her head to the side.
Is that why you left with Davian?
Weir grunted.
Caroline asked me the same question. Your cousin can be very insightful.
Sometimes, Weir shook his head.
Honestly, I don't know. I came because I thought it was important to find out what was going on with the boundary with the Signari, and especially because I didn't want Dav to be out here alone. For all his intelligence, he's naive in many ways. He'd never been out in the real world before. He needed me along.
He shrugged.
But I won't lie. The thought of going back to Elin Ilan, leaving my friends in the school behind and pretending I'd never been there, didn't sit well either. Maybe that influenced my decision. Maybe it didn't. It's hard to say.
There was silence for a few moments. Then Weir turned to Dizia.
What about you?
Dizia frowned.
What about me?
Weir gestured around him.
You said you came because of your brother. But I remember most of the girls from the houses. Even if they were somehow forced to come on a journey like this, they would be kicking and screaming most of the way. I haven't heard a word of complaint from you.
Dizia raised an eyebrow.
Are you saying I'm not ladylike?
Weir grinned.
I'm saying that you had the opportunity to stay with Caroline and enjoy an easy trip back to Elin Ilan, but you chose to come with us. I know a lot of that is from loyalty to your brother, but you don't strike me as someone who's pining to be home either.
Dizia smiled.
I suppose that's true, she admitted.
She thought for a moment.
Life in the palace can be difficult sometimes. I don't hate it, but I'm in no rush to return to it either.
Any particular reason? Dizia gave an awkward shrug.
Being the king's ward and friends with Caroline isn't always the easiest position to be in.
Weir nodded slowly. People see you as an easily accessible way to influence her. And maybe my uncle, too, he deduced.
Exactly,
Dizia sighed.
Most days, someone manages to corner me, trying to convince me of one thing or another. A tax should be raised, a law should be changed, the king should know about this nobleman's bad behavior. And there are always incentives for me should I decide to help.
She shrugged.
Recently it's changed from that to suggestions about whom I should be marrying. Houses sending their sons to court me after Caroline turns them away.
She scowled.
That I hate most of all. And a lot of them don't understand that persistence won't change my mind.
Weir frowned. They won't leave you alone?
Dizia shook her head. Several of them were apparently told by their fathers to woo me at all costs. I've had more expressions of undying love in the last few months than I would want to see in a lifetime.
She gave a small, humorless laugh.
Though that may stop now.
Why's that? Dizia hesitated, looking embarrassed.
I shot one of them, just before I left.
She paused.
In fact, it may have been why Caroline insisted I come with her and Aelric. I wasn't too popular with House Tel Shan.
Weir gave her an incredulous stare.
Shot? As in, with an arrow? Accidentally, and only in the shoulder. It wasn't much more than a graze, said Dizia defensively. Den Tel Shan. He said he'd do anything for me, so I said I needed someone to hold up targets while I practiced.
She grimaced, but the edges of her mouth still curled upward slightly at the memory.
The idiot didn't realize it was a joke. Then when I tried to back out by explaining to him that it was really dangerous, he got quite upset, said I was insulting him by suggesting that he wasn't courageous enough to do it. So I let him.
She sighed.
I didn't mean to hit him, of course, but he flinched on the first arrow. Not my proudest moment, even if he did bring it on himself somewhat.
Weir stared at her in astonishment for a moment, then gave a disbelieving laugh.
No wonder you agreed to come with us.
Dizia punched him on the arm in a reproving manner, but she smiled back. Weir shifted.
So how does Aelric take all of this?
Dizia smirked.
Not well.
And being the swordsman that he is rather handy to have as an older brother. Her smile widened a little.
Most of the time.
Weir grinned back.
They spoke for a while longer until the smells of cooking wafted over to them, and they reluctantly made their way back over to the others. The rest of the evening proved to be uneventful, and soon Weir was lying down to sleep, a warm feeling in the pit of his stomach whenever he thought of Dizia. In the back of his mind, though, and as hard as it was to remember sometimes, was the unavoidable truth of his position. He was a prince of the realm. There was a good chance that when the time came, his father would tell him with which girls he could socialize, or, more to the point, with which house he should be allying himself. Still, out here in the open air and away from the eyes of the nobility and his responsibilities, he could dream.
Davian frowned at the dusty plain stretching out before him. Where was he? A moment ago he had been bedding down to sleep on the road through the Manath Mountains. His mind was clear, sharp, with none of the fuzziness he would have expected from a dream. He looked around, trying to get his bearings. Behind him was a thick tangle of forest, but the trees were unlike anything he'd seen in Desrael. In front was a vast plain, in the middle of which a mountain range rose abruptly, majestically, silhouetted against the setting sun. The tallest mountain seemed cut in two, as if a great knife had carved a thin slice from its very core. The orange sunset shone directly through the gap, making each half of the mountain stand out in sharp relief. Though he'd never been here before, Davian recognized it. Many artists had rendered this very image to canvas. He was looking at Elin Tora. He shifted his attention back to the plain. Dotted across it, small groups of men in black armor moved with mechanical efficiency as they built fires and cooked food. Davian frowned as he studied them. Many were wearing helmets in addition to their armor, but where there should have been a slit or holes for eyes, there was only smooth, dark metal. How could they possibly see what they were doing? Yet each man moved with an assured air, none looking even slightly troubled by their apparent lack of vision. Over each face was inscribed a single, large symbol, three wavy vertical lines, encapsulated by a circle. An insignia, perhaps? Davian just stood for another minute or so, eyes narrowed as he observed the proceedings. Each fire was manned by a single soldier without a helmet, who simply watched as the other men went about their tasks. A commander of some kind, presumably, though there seemed to be a lot of them. He shivered as he watched. The entire picture was unsettling. Was he dreaming? He could feel the last of the day's heat still radiating from the ground, the dryness of the air in his lungs. He pinched himself sharply on the wrist, wincing as the pain registered. No, not dreaming. He was here. Suddenly he noticed a tall man with an authoritative air striding amongst the fires. The helmetless man, seemingly the leader of this army, raised a hand. The soldiers all stopped what they were doing, gathering around. There was a feeling of excitement, a sense of anticipation that was almost palpable. The general, as Davian thought of him, waited until every eye was on him. His features were rugged, with scars crisscrossing his face liberally. His black hair was shoulder-length, tied back. He gazed over his men calmly. His eyes were hard and proud.
2,000 years, he said, barely loud enough to be heard by the men in front. He shook his head. Too long.
There were murmurs of agreement amongst the soldiers, but the general raised his hand, silencing them immediately. He stood straighter, taller, pride in his stance. This time he shouted so that all could hear him.
2,000 years our people have waited for justice.
2,000 years of survival, of struggle, of sacrifice. But our time has finally come. We have broken free of our prison. We are at last ready to face our ancient foe. And you who have passed through the Ilshara unscathed are truly worthy of this fight. You all know me, or know of me. My name is Andon Mash'an, Slayer of Lihag, Second Sword of Daenerys. My trust is in the steel on my hip and the men at my side. My faith is in the plans of the Protector, and our resolve to carry them out.
He looked out upon them with a fierceness that made Davian take an involuntary step back.
By all these things, by my name and honor, by my life itself, I swear this one thing to you. When our task here is complete, this country will burn. Her rivers will run red. Her armies will be like dust beneath our feet. Her women will scream and her children will weep.
He raised his sword, screaming the last with fire in his eyes.
Andorra will fall. We will have our revenge.
The roar of approval rolled over Davian like a wave, thunderous in his ears. Davian shivered despite the afternoon heat. The road had disappeared and the forest had become thick, almost impassable as the day had progressed, slowing them to a crawl as they hacked their way forward and upward through hundreds of years of undisturbed growth. Something about the forest was unsettling here. The shadows seemed to writhe and shift in ways that did not marry up with the movement of the trees, and it felt as though eyes were on them at every moment. The trees themselves were thick, bent, and twisted, looming over them as if angered by their intrusion. No birds sang, and Davian had not heard the sounds of any other wildlife since early in the morning. He hadn't mentioned his odd dream of the previous night to anyone, not even Weir. He'd spent the entire morning telling himself that it meant nothing, that Tyrus's talk of dangers beyond the boundary had somehow brought it on. But deep down, he knew that wasn't true. He remembered every detail as if he had actually lived through it. He never remembered his dreams. Though he did his best to ignore the knowledge, what he'd seen had to have been foresight. In some ways, the development had actually been a welcome distraction, something else to focus on. Too often since Thrindar, he'd found his thoughts drifting to Asha, picturing her face, her smile, and then gritting his teeth at the fierce, aching pain those memories produced. He missed her. He'd never be able to speak with her again, never have a chance to tell her how he really felt. There was still a deep sadness at the death of Mistress Alida, Talion, all the others too. But the thoughts of Asha were always worse, always more intense. He looked up as Tyrus, who was leading the group, sliced through some more vines and emerged onto what appeared to be a clifftop. The scarred man stopped, turning to the others with a half-relieved, half-worried expression.
"We're here," he announced.
Davian reached the top of the rise, his eyes widening as he took in the sight, troubles momentarily forgotten. They were at the edge of a downward slope that was almost steep enough to describe as sheer. Several sets of broken stairs wound their way sharply downward to what appeared to be the remnants of a small village below. No movement was visible in the streets. The buildings were crumbling shells, each one missing its roof and at least one wall. The stillness was eerie in the fading light. Beyond the group of houses, the ground vanished into a vast chasm. The sound of distantly thundering water echoed even from where they were standing. Davian realized that if he were to go to the edge of that chasm, he would be able to peer down and see the white churning waters of the Lantarsh River far below. A massive bridge stretched out at least 100 feet over the abyss, maybe more, before vanishing into thick mist. It was made of a white stone that gleamed in the last rays of the day. No cracks or joins were evident, as if the entire thing had been carved from one enormous piece of rock. From this distance, it looked wide enough to comfortably take 5 men walking abreast, perhaps even wider. Despite its length, Davian could not see any supports. It hovered above the chasm as if suspended by an invisible rope. It was the mist, however, that made him pause. Unnaturally thick and dark, it hung like a shroud in the middle of the chasm. It seemed to devour the waning sunlight, making the entire scene feel colder and darker than it should have. Staring out at it, Davian suddenly realized he could make out vague shapes within it, the very tops of houses and other structures within the city. If he had not seen those, he may not have believed there was anything at all between the two sides of the gorge.
"Dylanis," Weir murmured beside him in an awestruck voice.
Taris dismounted.
"We'll have to leave the horses," he observed regretfully.
"Will they survive?" protested Dizia.
"There's a good chance they'll make their way back to the road."
Taris gestured to his own mount, which was whickering softly, rolling its eyes so it didn't have to look upon the city below.
"Animals have a sense about this place. They want to get away from it as quickly as possible. By the time they lose that feeling, they should be back where someone will find them."
Dizia looked like she was going to object, but then took another look at the narrow, crumbling steps and remained silent. They began unpacking their mounts, taking as much food and water as they could each comfortably carry. Taris quickly fed each of the horses, then gave them a slap to send them on their way. As he'd predicted, the animals didn't need much motivation, moving back along the path they had carved through the forest at a steady trot. The group made their way carefully down one of the many stairways, which were etched straight from the rocky sides of the cliff. The steps were narrow and quite steep. Davian forced himself to focus on each one, taking care not to slip. Grass and weeds had long ago begun creeping through cracks in the stone. Though the stairs had doubtless once been well maintained, shale and other loose rubble now made the descent a dangerous undertaking. Finally, they had picked their way safely to the bottom. The thundering of the Lantarsh was louder now, though the air remained unnaturally absent of other sounds. The sun had slipped below the horizon, and the dark, empty husks of buildings glowered at the party as they trudged through the narrow streets. An occasional gust of wind blew a loose window shutter that was somehow still on its hinges, making everyone flinch and look around nervously.
"Perhaps we should make camp for the night here, and cross Dylanis in the morning," Aelric suggested.
Taris hesitated, then gave a reluctant nod.
"It wouldn't hurt to be rested when we try the city," he agreed.
They made a rudimentary camp and settled in, trying to ignore the sinister feeling of the abandoned town around them. A couple of hours had passed when a prickling on the back of Davian's neck made him twist in his seated position. He looked up. At the top of the cliffside stairs, silhouetted against the fading light, stood 2 figures. The wind was blowing, yet their cloaks did not seem to move.
"Taris,"
he said, not taking his eyes from the scene. Taris followed Davian's line of sight and inhaled sharply.
"Get to the bridge! Run!"
Davian sat rooted to the spot for a few more seconds. The figures moved. Suddenly they were starting down the stairs. They seemed to move casually, almost lazily, but their progress was terrifyingly quick. There was a flash of light and the earth in front of Davian erupted, showering him with shale. Spurred into motion, he and the others scrambled to their feet and ran. They were already close to the bridge. Davian knew that it could not have taken him more than 20 seconds to reach its edge, but it felt like an eternity. Around him, bursts of power flew past, any one of which would have torn his body apart if it had struck him. Some of the houses, already decaying, collapsed entirely as bolts of light smashed through their foundations, sending clouds of dust and grit into the air. He was last to reach the bridge. Without hesitation, he ran onto its smooth surface, the roaring of the Lantarsh far below crashing in his ears. A few paces in, he slipped, tumbling. The stone was so smooth that it didn't even badly graze his skin. He rolled over, scrambling to his feet. He turned to see how far behind the Shateth were, and let out a cry of terror. The two figures stood at the very edge of the bridge, less than 5 feet from Davian. The shadows hid their faces, but he could feel the malice, the frustration in their gaze. Vaguely, behind him, he could hear someone calling his name. Aelric, he thought, but all his senses were consumed by the black-cloaked creatures in front of him. For a long moment, Davian was sure he was going to die. Then he was backing away as fast as he could. The Shateth just stood there, watching him. The bolts of essence had stopped. A hand clasped his shoulder from behind. He leapt, heart racing, before he realized it was Taris.
"What are they doing?"
Davian whispered, eyes still fixed on the Shateth.
"Either they cannot cross or they refuse to," Taris puffed, out of breath from the sprint. He glanced over his shoulder towards the mist-wreathed city. "The law of decay is warped from the edges of the bridges inward. They know if they try to attack us with essence now, it would simply dissolve before it reached us."
"But why did they wait until now to show themselves?"
asked Dizia, looking puzzled.
"They've had our trail for nearly 2 weeks."
"Perhaps they were trying to force us into the city all along."
It was Caden, watching the creatures at the edge of the bridge worriedly. Nobody said anything to that, but the mere possibility sent a shiver down Davian's spine. Taris shook his head.
"No. The first must have been waiting for the second. He just got here too late."
He bit his lip as he stared at the Shateth.
"First she speaks Andaran, then she waits for reinforcements at the risk of losing us. A survival instinct. Something is different,"
he murmured, almost to himself. Suddenly one of the creatures, Davian could not tell which one, spoke.
"He belongs to us, Tirisar," it hissed. "Give him over, and you may yet live."
It was not angry or even insistent. It was completely devoid of emotion. Taris offered his hand to Davian, hoisting him to his feet.
"Ignore them," he said to the others. "Let's move."
No one voiced a complaint, and they started silently along the long, open bridge. After a minute, Davian looked back. The Shateth were still just standing there, watching. Then the mists closed around him, hiding the creatures, and the desolate town from view. He turned his head forward again, facing into the thick white murk. They had reached Dailanis. Chapter 24. Weir took a deep breath, heart still hammering. He threw a nervous glance over his shoulder, relieved to see that the mists had finally hidden the Shateth and their unsettling stares from view. He slowed his pace a little, breathing evening out as the end of the bridge became visible up ahead. A flight of stairs led sharply downward. Below, stretching away into the fog, the rooftops of hundreds of abandoned buildings were barely discernible through the haze. Taris came to a gradual halt at the top of the stairs, and everyone followed suit. Weir gave an involuntary cough as he stared into the city. The atmosphere here was thicker, damp, and hard to breathe. The mood of Dailanis was even heavier and more oppressive than it had looked from the outside.
"Are we safe?" Weir asked Taris.
Taris looked around at the foreboding mists, then nodded, though his expression was still grim.
"From the Shateth, at least."
Dizia shivered, walking up to stand beside Weir.
"What if we get through, and they're waiting for us on the other side?"
"They won't be. There's not a crossing for at least 200 miles in any direction. Even with their speed, it would take them several days to get there."
Taris paused, then rummaged around in his bag, producing 4 shackles.
"Before we go any further..." Weir sighed.
"They're really necessary?"
"We've already talked about this," said Taris, his tone firm. "You all need to wear one. The contract will let me sense you. If we get separated, it's the only way I'll be able to find you."
Aelric looked at the shackle with obvious distaste.
"I'm still worried about what happens if you don't find us.
I don't want to wear that thing for the rest of my life.
Taris gave a long-suffering sigh.
If I don't find you, then either I will be dead, in which case the shackle will come off of its own accord, or you will be dead, in which case you won't terribly mind.
Ditsia pushed past her brother, rolling up her sleeve.
We know. We're happy to do it, she said, glaring at Aelric.
Taris nodded as if there had been no issue, touching the shackle to Ditsia's wrist. The young woman stared as the torque sealed itself, touching it lightly.
I don't feel any different, she reassured Aelric.
Aelric hesitated, then reluctantly submitted himself to the same process. He gave an irritable tug at the twisted metal band once it was on, but did not appear to suffer any ill effects. Davian followed, and then Taris held up the last shackle to Weir, gesturing for him to come forward.
What about Niamh?
Asked Weir, realizing the priest didn't have one. Taris shook his head.
There aren't enough shackles.
He turned to Niamh.
If you're separated...
It's okay, said Niamh. I've studied maps of Dylanus. If it happens, I can figure out the way through.
Taris and Niamh exchanged a look, so brief that Weir immediately wondered if he'd imagined it. Then Taris was turning back to him.
Your turn.
Weir sighed. He hated shackles. He wasn't as badly affected as some gifted, but whenever he wore one, he still felt significantly slower, weaker. He held out his arm, and Taris touched the torque to it. Pain lanced through Weir's head. He gave an involuntary cry as his knees buckled. He scrabbled desperately at the metal as it slithered around his arm, trying his utmost to rip it off. It was hard to breathe. And then he was lying on the cool, smooth stone of the bridge. He took a few long, shaky breaths, vision clearing to see everyone crowded around him, their faces taut with concern. Taris was kneeling at his side, the shackle back in his hand, his face pale.
Weir, can you hear me?
Taris asked urgently.
Are you okay?
Weir groaned, elevating himself on one elbow.
A little dizzy, but I think I'll be fine.
Taris exhaled in relief.
Good.
His brow furrowed.
What happened? Have you ever had a reaction like that to a shackle before?
Never.
Weir climbed to his feet with Davian's assistance.
I sometimes get a little shaky or nauseous, but that was...
He shook his head, lost for words. There was silence for a few moments.
Should we be wearing these?
Aelric asked nervously.
Whatever happened to Weir happened as soon as he put the shackle on. You'll be fine, said Taris, waving away the question.
His eyes never left Weir.
I think I'm going to have to risk Dylanus without a shackle, noted Weir, still a little groggy.
I think you are, agreed Taris. Just don't try to use essence while we're in the city, under any circumstances.
Weir frowned.
I thought you said it has no effect here.
It doesn't, and we have no idea why.
Taris rubbed his forehead.
For all we know, it's by design. Essence could be dangerous here somehow.
Or it could attract whatever guards this place,
pointed out Caden.
Exactly,
Taris acknowledged Caden with a nod.
Regardless